Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. Please stay tuned at the end of the story for a message from our sponsor.
Is there a place and time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
This month's story, 146, The Last Enclave. Somewhere in some time, the walls you have built to protect yourself might instead be there to protect the outside from you.
Lucy, stop!
I lifted an ear and tilted my head slightly in mock deference, then continued to bark at the squirrel in the tree outside the window. It defiantly chattered back. Who knew there were so many of the things in Arcadia? At least that hadn't been in the briefing notes. Although, given my form, it would seem an important detail someone should have included. Arcadia is the quaintly myopic name the locals had given this place. A place which had been mostly forgotten as we moved on. I certainly wouldn't consider it a paradise, as the name implies, or, as most here think of it, as the last existing part of the world. We don't really know much about what goes on in here, and that's why I've been sent. Not to judge, just report back on the status of the last surviving enclave, and if necessary, plant the seeds of its eventual emancipation. We all agree, no enclave can be allowed to go on in isolation forever, and this is the last one, and the most challenging to bring back.
Lucy, stop!
I heard the air whistling through the pull tab before it hit. Lee's aim was off today, so the unopened beer can missed me and collided with the wall, splitting open at one end, then spinning onto the floor, accelerated for a moment, propelled by a fizzing amber exhaust, until the can emptied its contents onto the linoleum. I knew he'd get Gary to clean it up later. I ignored Lee and turned my attention back to the barking. I needed to play my part as the lovable but annoying companion accurately. Despite my vocalizations, I could hear his heavy footsteps behind me. I only had a few moments to check the recording device in my collar to make sure it was backing up to the ID chip under my skin in my rear left hunch. He took a swipe at me. I dodged at the last second, then stuck my tail between my legs and scuttled off under the table.
Bad dog, stay there!
He demanded, then went to answer the polite knock at the front door.
Stay,
he warned, glancing over his shoulder as he opened the door.
Oh, it's you. You're late. Don't stand there gawking like the idiot you are. Come in. While I'm getting ready, you can help by cleaning up a beer that Lucy knocked off the table. She can be a real pain. Smells beer right through the can. Loves licking it up.
Lee tossed Gary an old towel. Gary entered cautiously and looked around the living space. He noticed me cowering under the table and smiled. I had met him a couple times before. I wagged my tail a bit in acknowledgement. His eyes moved from me to the pool of beer, then up to the mark left on the wall by the can. He wasn't a fool. A bit younger, leaner and shorter than the beefy, edging towards portly Lee, he was dressed in jeans, light runners, and a polo shirt. He looked ready to spend the day on his computer rather than what we were about to do.
So, you actually have the guts to go through with this?
Lee called from the bedroom.
I'm surprised. Thought all you whiners were cowards, losers, fast on criticism until you're challenged to back it up. You know your nanny can't come on this to tuck you into bed each night and tell you a nice fairy tale. We're taking a real risk here, and if we're caught, it means a year in prison. Does that frighten you?
Gary made a half-hearted effort to sop up the beer. Jerk, he muttered under his breath, then reached out a hand and scratched me behind the ears.
Why do you stick with him?
He whispered to me. I got up and lazily stretched, doing a downward dog. It felt great. a small pleasure of this form.
If you and your dim-witted followers would open your minds for a second and look at the facts, not the stuff you've been spoon-fed by the government and their puppet media, you'd realize the truth. But if this is the only way, then I'm prepared to do it. Gary called back, while continuing to scratch me.
I had chosen my form well. Yes, I could have been manifested in their shape. But in this enclave, a stranger is instantly mistrusted. They're extremely rare, not welcome, and if you can't explain where you came from, shunned. No, the truth must come eventually from one of their own. But none of them trust their official leaders, so a direct approach will not work here. Lee and Gary have major influence through their online communities, hence they are my best option.
Your online denials are a joke, like you,
Lee yelled from the bedroom.
When we get to the far side of the boundary, you'll see for yourself that we're the last, that there's nothing outside of Arcadia. Those documents you guys claim to have found are just some poor sop's fantasy. Fake history intended to stir up the gullible. It's going to be fun watching you eat your words, and I'm recording that moment, so I can spam all the other weenies who believe you. Ha! It's going to be great! It'll add 10 points to my social rank. More if it's a slow day on the net when I post the truth.
Lee trudged out of his bedroom, dressed in camo overalls with a matching baseball cap, hauling two heavy-looking backpacks.
I'm ready,
he announced. Gary threw the beer-soaked towel into the sink and looked Lee up and down with visible disgust.
We agreed to let the facts speak for themselves. Let's get this over with.
He grumbled and headed out the door. The beat-up 4x4 bounced along a rough trail, leading away from the ring road which separated the enclave from the forbidden exclusion zone. Most people just called it the boundary. Lee and Gary, in tense silence, had to labor over an hour to cut through the 3-meter-high chain-link and barbed wire barrier, which kept the inhabitants out of the zone. After we were through, they propped the cut section of fence back into place and wired it up, so unless someone stopped at the exact spot, no one would notice. Entering the boundary zone was strictly prohibited, and from the most pristine condition of the fence, it was obvious that most of the inhabitants obeyed this law. It was common knowledge that somewhere beyond the fence of Arcadia, the center of everything simply ends, and beyond that, there is nothing. Their myths and children's stories populate the beyond with monsters, left over from the Great Separation event, or describe a place so toxic that to step beyond the protection of the enclave would bring a quick and painful death. Few have challenged this understanding of the beyond until recently, and that change is what has brought me here. Looking from the inner edge of the boundary, one can only see the trees of a stressed-looking boreal forest, and behind that, a low range of mountains. But nothing beyond. The sky slips behind the rocky ridges to meet the earth at an unseen location. It was a clever design, and I can easily imagine this place is a valley surrounded by mountains. But the other side of those mountains was our target. Lee was confident his 4x4 would make it through the scrub and foothills, and then we'd be on foot from there. Until then, I rode shotgun, with my head stuck out the front passenger window, taking in the scents. Another unexpected pleasure of my temporary form.
Dorothy Lopez is real. It's been proven. She's in the citizen records as D. Lopez. Birth certificate and everything. They're wrong. D doesn't stand for Diana.
Gary, squeezed into the back seat between the camping gear, tried to yell over the wind noise.
Can't hear your tiny voice. You're finally admitting Lopez isn't real?
Lee laughed, keeping his eyes on the crude animal trail he was trying to follow. Gary leaned forward and yelled in Lee's ear.
No!
Lee's face hardened.
Lucy, head in, now!
The window suddenly started rolling up, catching my nose.
Stubborn dog!
Lee grabbed my collar and roughly hauled me away from the window. It zipped closed, tearing out a few whiskers in the process. I yelped. Lee hit the brakes, sending Gary's head into the back of the passenger seat and me into the dashboard. I yelped again.
Never, never yell in my ear, slimeball. Dorothy Lopez, really? That pile of crap of hers is fake. She's a fake. Everyone knows that, so don't even go there with the citizen records and net archives BS. It was planted so gullible sad sacks like you would spend your lives hunched over keyboards trying to piece together a history that don't exist. I'd feel sorry for you if you didn't sicken me so much.
Gary, rubbing his head angrily, pulled himself back into his seat. If it's just made up, then why did the scan of the first page of her diary I posted on your group page make you so angry? Was it the information or the photos Dorothy included? Maybe it just makes too much sense. No one has ever really been able to explain why Arcadia was started. There were no physical records up until the diary was found. Just third-hand verbal accounts, which no one can question.
Isn't it obvious? Things just got too bad, idiot.
Lee's face was turning red.
That's why we built Arcadia. It's a refuge, get it? And no fake lost files are going to change that. We got anyone who was rational together and closed out the insanity, kept it away from us, and it's worked for generations. None of that ugly is in here with us.
Lee motioned at the distant ridges.
What was left turned on itself and destroyed everything. So I'm risking my neck to drag you out here to look for yourself, to once and for all prove there's nothing left. It's the only way to convince crazies like you. I'm sick of your groveling complaints about cover-ups and the real truth. One picture of your miserable slack-jawed face staring into the garbage heaps of the dead past will say it all.
Dorothy's diary is just saying that we're not who we think we are. What are you people so afraid of, Lee?
Afraid? We'll see who's afraid.
Lee stepped hard on the accelerator, making the truck fishtail down the trail recklessly. I barked with excitement. Lee laughed. Gary braced his arms against the front seat and looked sick. By twilight, we were only 2/3 of the way to the Boundary Mountains. To conserve the batteries, Lee didn't want to use the headlights, so he stopped the 4x4 in a clearing to set up camp for the night. Gary looked relieved to be out of the truck and worked silently to set up camp. Lee unfolded a homemade network antenna and set it on the roof of the cab, aiming it back at the center of the enclave. The two men had agreed to keep in contact with their online communities as long as they could. I sniffed out the area, then settled down under a fallen tree to watch both. Gary didn't notice Lee hide a wireless vidcam in a tree and a gear bag behind a shrub. When the night came, the guys turned on the LED lamps and heated rehydrated food in a portable microwave. The locals believed their government had riddled the boundary zone with sensors that could detect smoke, so an open fire was out of the question. I had sniffed out our campsite for electronics, but had found nothing and suspected the belief was planted to keep the zone clear of weekend partiers. Lee and Gary ignored each other as they ate.
Here, Lucy.
Lee scraped the leftovers from his plate into a plastic bowl, then added the last few scraps from the open can and set it in front of my face. I could smell the preservatives, but ate it anyway, glad that I would only be here for a short time.
Good girl.
I feigned submissiveness and rolled over on my back. Lee scratched my tummy.
You should take some lessons from Lucy here. She knows who feeds her and how to act.
I'm not a dog. Gary looked up from his tablet,
face a shadowy, sullen blue from the screen.
Posting, huh? Got your little group of zeros hating me yet? No problem. We'll be out of range of the wireless tomorrow, so lie away. I'm going to bed.
Lee got up and retired to his tent.
Jerk.
Gary muttered back. A few minutes later, Gary shut off his screen and retired. He didn't know it, but Lee wasn't asleep. I could hear Lee's breathing. It was several hours later, after I had settled in under the truck to keep warm, when I heard Lee quietly leave his tent. I crawled out silently and laid in the long grass to watch. In the faint artificial moonlight, I could see that Lee had somehow changed his form. His head seemed larger, with a bulbous projection extending out from the back of his skull. His hands and feet were larger too, and he appeared to be wearing a form-fitting garment that emphasized his shoulders and lower body. Lee went to the place where he had hidden the bag, took something out, and set it on a portable stand, then ran a power cable from it to the 4x4. Next, he checked his hidden camera and the time on his smartwatch. The glow of the tiny screen revealed huge black eyes on a gray face. Instinctively, I wanted to bark, but somehow held myself back. Lee positioned himself near Gary's tent, then checked his watch again and touched a remote I hadn't noticed before. The truck's horn started suddenly shattering the night's calm, and the lights behind Lee blazed to life, throwing a distorted shadow of Lee the monster onto Gary's tent. Through the thin nylon, I could see Gary sit, bolt upright, then scramble to unzip the entrance flap. As soon as his head and shoulders were outside, Lee charged, yelling angry gibberish. Gary screamed, then stumbled out, tripping several times before he ran into the darkness, away from the light. Lee stopped abruptly, then turned to face the vidcam in the tree. He took off his fake head, then doubled over, laughing. After he regained control, he looked directly into the camera.
"And that's the fearless leader of the True History Movement, probably halfway back to Metro by now, thinking he was attacked by an abomination from beyond the boundary. Tomorrow we'll reach it and prove once and for all that there is nothing left outside, just like our history tells us. I'm just asking for your support when the authorities arrest me for entering the zone."
I heard him well before Lee, crashing through the underbrush in a headlong rage. Gary burst into a small pool of light at full speed, yelling, You! He lined up to take a swing at Lee's face, but his momentum didn't allow him to correct. At the last second, Lee sidestepped and tripped Gary, causing him to sprawl into the dirt. Gary rolled over and spit at Lee. A tiny amount managed to find Lee's face, making him instantly fly into a rage. Gary scrambled backward, trying to get his feet under him. Lee, forgetting the live stream, took chase and was winding up to kick Gary in the back when I jumped between them, barking, then bared my teeth at Lee. Realizing my mistake too late, Lee's boot hit my midriff, sending me tumbling into a shrub. Then, realizing he was still live streaming, Lee recovered his composure and turned to the camera.
"You see the extent of the hatred here that the True History Movement promotes? Even the guy's dog is ready to attack us. But I'll be okay. I'll be back in range in 2 days with irrefutable video proof to stop their craziness from infecting our minds."
Lee hit the remote and everything went dark. The next morning, I was stiff, where Lee's foot had connected with me as I stretched myself. Lee towered over me, glaring.
"Did you bare your teeth at me last night, girl?"
I wagged my tail and rolled over on my back.
"Guess you were just scared by my costume, huh? Probably smelled different or something. But never do that again."
He threw some leftover breakfast on the ground beside me and walked away. I growled at his back. We drove for only another bone-shattering mile before the dried-up riverbed we had been following since late yesterday came to an abrupt end at what had once been a waterfall. And Gary had gone behind a group of large boulders to relieve himself. Lee checked that his nemesis wasn't watching and put all the heavy gear into one backpack, filling the other with the light stuff, topping it off with a few heavy-looking bits of kit. I sniffed around, watching, assessing the unfolding situation, giving Lee a wide berth. At the moment, he was ignoring me, and I preferred it that way. When Gary finally returned, Lee already had the lighter pack on. He pointed to the other bag.
"That's yours."
Gary struggled with it, giving Lee a suspicious glance.
"They're both the same."
Lee took the backpack off and opened it, revealing the top dressing of heavy gear.
"You spend too much time behind a computer inventing cyber lies. Well, you'll get to experience reality today, but obviously you're not ready for it."
Lee gave Gary a self-satisfied smirk, turned, and started to pick his way up the slope.
"Behind the smile, a hidden knife!" I barked at Gary, then realized neither man could understand.
"Good girl. You tell him to stop whining and get going,"
Lee called back. Gary struggled to get the heavy pack on, then followed cautiously, almost losing his balance a few times as he tried to adjust for the top-heavy weight. Lee kept up a pace that made even him sweat, constantly stopping and deriding Gary for being slow. Finally, about two-thirds to the top of the ridge we were climbing, Gary gave up, sat down on a rock, and refused to move. He looked down to the tree line below, then up the scree-covered slope to the top.
I can't go any further," he reluctantly admitted.
Lee ignored him and continued up.
"Hey, I told you, I can't go any further."
Lee finally stopped.
"You're giving up that easy?"
He made his way back down to Gary, fists balled, standing menacingly upslope.
"Scared of what you'll find? Should we turn back now? That'd suit you just fine, wouldn't it? Nothing resolved, so you could continue to sow doubt and hatred of the things that have kept us going. You disgust me."
Gary jumped into a rage.
"Let me see your pack,"
he screamed, grabbing for it and catching one of the straps. Caught off guard by the sudden movement, Lee was spun around as Gary ripped it from his shoulder.
Surprised by his own actions, Gary stood for a second, gasping for air, holding the other pack in one hand. It took him a few seconds before he realized how light it was. Then his face turned red with rage. Not wanting a replay of the night before, I positioned myself between the two men, barking and growling at both.
"You..."
Gary was too mad to speak. Instead, he dropped his own pack, then started up the slope with Lee's.
"You should see the vid. I recorded you climbing up here. You looked so... so... useless."
I growled at Lee and bared my teeth.
"I told you, Lucy,"
I growled again. Lee picked up a rock. I knew what was coming and instinctually tucked my tail between my legs and took off upslope. I heard the rock hit somewhere behind me. Lee swore. We finally reached the top of the ridge. The two men stood on the rocks in awe. Below us, the steep backside of the mountain fell away to where the artificial sky met the ground. As testament to its designer's ingenuity, it had been built in such a way that it was almost impossible to tell that the sky was a dome. It only gave away its true nature as it approached the line of transparent viewports that ringed the enclave and joined the sky to the ground. The low mountains which butted up against the edge hid this fact until you stood, like us, on the top of the last ridge. But Lee and Gary came out of their stupors at the same moment, dropped their packs, and stumbled down the slope to the viewports, falling several times on the loose scree.
Lee made it to the viewports first, cupped his hands around his face, pressed against the thick glass, and stared out into the blackness beyond. After a few seconds, he pushed away and began convulsing with laughter.
Take a look!
He yelled, gasping for air. Gary pressed his face to the glass a few meters away, then collapsed on the dirt, eyes tearing.
There's nothing. There's nothing out there.
He whimpered. Lee had pulled a small vid camera from his pocket and was pointing it at Gary, recording.
Admit it, you were suckered. There is no Dorothy Lopez, no diary. It's all a fake to stir up the gullible, like you and your useless group.
Something in Gary seemed to break, and a flood of pent-up anger rushed in, making his face twist up. Suddenly, he jumped at Lee, knocking him to the ground. Both men began to wrestle in the scree, fists, knees, and elbows trying to connect with the other. I started barking at the viewports, but the two were too engrossed in their fighting to pay attention to me. Lee had taken the upper hand and was on top of Gary, winding up for a punch, when I leapt in at him and knocked him off. Like a crazed beast, he came at me. I ran to the viewport and barked again, finally drawing his attention to what was outside.
What the...
Lee stuttered in shock. Gary struggled to his feet behind Lee and was about to take a run at him when he saw it too. Both watched in awe as the gentle glowing arc of the world below rolled into view. Outside, brilliant white glistened from reinvigorated polar ice caps. Deep green fingers extended in from the emerald blue oceans, recolonizing the great mid-latitude deserts. While they were distracted, I quietly slipped away. They had a long way to go before they would be allowed back, but I felt I had planted the seed which would lead to their repatriation.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. To listen to other great podcasts on our network, such as Future Chat or Press Start to join, please head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. Want digital banking that works for you? Sign up for an ATB no-fee all-in account. By doing most of your banking digitally, you'll avoid paper fees, monthly fees, and get unlimited digital transactions. It's 24/7 banking at its finest. To find out more about ATB Financial, please head over to atb.com. Makeshift Stories is released once a month between the 15th and the 20th. The story is written by Ellen V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing music was composed and recorded by David Hume. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by writing a review on any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.